This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Pam Hansen,
Bruce Markwell,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now Pam, you were talking about you'd moved to Palmerston North and your husband was invited to join Rotary.
Yes, it was a new Rotary Club, Terrace End Rotary Club. I think it was the fourth in Palmerston North, and the second president, I think, visited Mike, Jack Silver, who had Terrace End Hardware, and said, we need somebody young like you, a young dentist. We have a classification where we have one man from a lot of different classifications, and that's your vocation or your job. And so Mike joined it that year, 1960, and he enjoyed it. He got very involved with it.
So now, was he the only dentist, or did they say because he's an orthodontist?
No,
they
he wasn't an orthodontist. This is
1960. That's the, it was earlier. Okay.
No, he was the only dentist.
So he was the only dentist in the class?
Yes. Okay. Yes, he was the only dentist. It was a delightful group of people, and one of the great strengths of Rotary is that everybody has a different job. They have a vocational label that has the job that they do, and as young couple coming to Palmerston, it was a really great introduction to a lot of different people. We'd both been to university at Otago and knew lots of people that were there with us, including lots of doctors and dentists, and I did physical education, and we had friends in other faculties. But here, going to Rotary, you meet a plumber and a car salesman and an electrician and an academic teacher and a whole group.
Was there
group
a big age range as well?
Mike was definitely the youngest. Yeah. We were in our 20s, so that was very young. But they weren't just a group of old men. It was a wide range of ages, right. And that was a lovely thing. And wives were quite involved. We had Christmas parties, we had picnics, and it was a great cross-section of the city, which was a wonderful thing to make friends with all these people. And they had a great bond because they saw each other once a week, and I think that is a huge undertaking which isn't working so well now. One night a week with a meal. And I didn't mind it because I was busy with my children and Mike was a great husband and we did lots of things together as a family. But it was a commitment that families would not have the time to let each other be so involved nowadays. I mean, he sometimes was away both days and a weekend doing things with Rotary, you know.
Yeah, because they did a lot of community activities.
Huge amounts of community work. But it was... Yes, but wives often went along and, you know, had joined them for a cup of tea or a meal. And he got so involved in Rotary that he ended up sort of being president of all the committees. And so it was a very big part of our lives. And the children went along to Christmas parties and they had quite a lot of things that involved children, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes, we did. It was in those days, women weren't... in Rotary,
no.
they couldn't be Rotarians. So, but the involvement of women through the outside things, which you've alluded to, were very important and kept the club together gave the women the feeling that they were part of Rotary as well, without actually being Rotarians as such.
Yeah, no Rotary had women in it, and they didn't have. In the Wheel, which was Rotary Wives Club, was not around in those early days. But I felt I knew everyone in the Rotary Club, and I knew all the wives.
Was there the feeling at that time that, say, the men were busy with earning the money for the family, and the women were doing more the social connections and links to families and so on?
Most women were home when they had young families, and it, They did not go back into a career until later when the children had been through their schooling. It got younger and younger until nowadays women have as big a career, and often the men are the caregivers, and that works wonderfully with lots of families. But I did not feel deprived at the time that I couldn't further my career, because I had wonderful, capable, intelligent friends doing plenty of things other than just being at home looking after babies. But never felt deprived, because life was full, and we knew lots of people, and we could get around and do things. We were lucky. We had a motor car and family within reach and friends in Hawke's Bay. And
So is your impression, given that the women with young children weren't out working, but there was a lot going on, so is there a lot that's not happening now because mothers are at work, do you think, in terms of the environment, either for children or for family?
Well, you did a lot more with your children. You took children with you to all sorts of things, to meet up with friends and to... mine all went to a kindergarten. Where if you played sport, as the mother, you could usually take your child along. My children came to tennis a huge amount, to badminton, not to squash, that was in the evenings mostly. As a family, when my children were quite little, when we came back from 2 years in London, we joined a ski club and we went up the mountain. Very fortunate, but I made all my own ski gear. We joined a club, so we holidayed up in the snow on the mountain at Whakapapa. And that was wonderful, and we had our closest friends had a batch at Taupo, and we went there. My husband became a very keen and a very good fly fisherman. Well, the women nowadays have a career. They nearly all have a career, so they don't have... the pace of life is so fast that you... not very many have time to go for a walk and chat to people and talk to the lady over the garden, over the fence gardening. I think that's sad, because I'm caught up in the pace of life too, and there's never enough time to just sort of slow down, because people are all jumping into cars and getting places fast and cramming so many different things into every day. I don't know how the young couples that both work managed to bring families up and all cope with the tiredness and the stress.
Yeah. Hey, if I can just go back a little bit, you're talking about Mike's involvement in Rotary, which, I'm well aware of, but if you could just let other people know and just tell us, did you have exchange students, you had postgraduate students, and Mike actually led what we call in Rotary a GSE team to Africa at one point. So if you could just sort of elaborate a little bit more.
Well, being involved in Rotary and with children at school, we certainly had a lot of exchange students. Some good, not so good. We also had... Rotary has postgrad scholars, and I'm a fan of postgraduate scholars coming, because they are adults who are successful already with their tertiary education, and they are giving back to the community already, and they're not naughty teenagers that feel rather special. So Linda Post, who came to Terrace End, had quite a lot of exchange students and postgrad students. Linda Post, who came from Ottawa, and not from Ottawa, from Toronto, to Massey to do postgrad in food technology, is still a very close friend. She's like a daughter. Mary Earle, who's in my street, who's still alive, was her mentor in the food department, and she got up to one of the top positions in the Canadian government. And then Rotary sent away group study exchange teams, and Mike was on the committee. He was on every committee in Rotary and had been asked to be district governor, but he couldn't leave because he became an orthodontist and you couldn't walk away from a surgery and go away for a year visiting Rotary clubs. But he then was asked to lead a team to the South Cape Town province and Southwest Africa. And this was in 1978. He had a marvellous trip with five young men from the district, one from Masterton, one from the Wellington area, one from Dannevirke, one from rural Whanganui, and who was the fifth? No, it's four, and the fifth, yeah. The leader was the fifth. Lovely, lovely young men, all very capable in their own fields, and they had a very interesting time because apartheid was alive and it was quite scary. People were being put under house arrest and things. He was very shocked in Cape Town to go to the university and go to the dental school and find that coloured people were in a different floor at the university and could not ever go onto the floor where the white South Africans were. He was treated very well. They had a very, very busy schedule. And it was... This is a smaller side, which I hope you enjoy, because South Africans are very proud of their wines. And Mike had these four young men in their 20s. Perhaps one was early 30s, I can't remember. And they went to a different house and a different Rotary club nearly every day. It was a hugely, hugely busy schedule. And all the people that entertained them in their homes and all the Rotary clubs that entertained them, like we do to visitors here, put on the best food, but put on lots of alcohol and a lot of wine, not so much beer, which young Kiwis were more used to. I remember Mike saying to me, it was only about the third or fourth night, and I realised that these young men were saying yes to have another glass, and we would be out quite late. They had their called braai, which is a barbecue out on the stoep on the deck, and they would feed well, but they would drink well. You must try this wine. And Mike suddenly said, the next day, nearly every day, at midday, a lot of the Rotary clubs had a midday meeting, and they would go to a midday lunch, and one of the boys would have to stand up and speak. And he said he realised quite quickly that this was not going to work. And luckily, they were out on about the third night, I think, and someone suggested that perhaps they might like a spritzer, which is wine with soda water in it. And he said to me, that was the saving grace, because I got the boys together and said, I know it's wonderful to be offered all this, and I don't resent you enjoying their drinks and your meal, but we can't go on drinking at that rate. And then trying to stand up and give a good presentation at 12 noon the next day. So they all started putting soda water and having spritzers, which sort of saved his bacon. And they went to Namibia, which is Southwest Africa, and SWAPO, the Southwest African People's Organisation, was a very militant organisation. And the thing about Rotary group study exchanges, you get places that the people that live there never get to. You get opportunities to go and have discussions, with interviews, talks with people, and see things. And it was a wonderful trip, but very complex because of the fact that apartheid was so alive and well. And when Mike came back, Bruce, you'll remember, when he came back, and lots of people wanted him to speak. He was a very good public speaker. But he used to say, there's no simple solution, because he said, you can't understand, sitting in New Zealand and seeing it, you can't understand the complexity of all the nations, all the coloured people of all the tribes and the backgrounds, and it's so complex. It's never going to be easy, and you know, but seeing it so alive and well with people, so can't go on the same bus, can't get in the same car, can't go to university in the same university. Scary. But it was a very successful trip. And he came back, and yeah, it was wonderful. He spoke at a lot of places then. He got very involved then. I don't know, Bruce knows, he was sort of the president of so many committees, but he'd put so much into Rotary, and our children had grown up, and not long before he died, sadly drowning, fishing in Taupo, in 1984, we decided that perhaps he could take on being district governor. They kept asking him, and we thought that perhaps that would have been really enjoyable, but it wasn't to be. Remind. You talk.
And as a result of Mike's unfortunate passing, the Rotary Club set to inform a trust on his name. And perhaps you might just like to go over that.
Bruce Markwell, who's here with us, was the first chairman of this trust. Mike was a good guy, and everybody liked him. And it's very sad when people's lives are taken in their 40s doing something they love doing. And Rotary was grateful for his input over the years that he'd been a member of the Rotary Club. And one of the things, I'll just tell you briefly, one of the things he was very involved in was the National Kidney Foundation. A very close friend, Bill Somerville, whose wife died of kidney failure. When he died, Bill Somerville said to Mike, I would like to set up a foundation. I'd like to work and set up a kidney foundation. Would you like to work with me? And Mike got so involved with that, and I'm very proud still that Kidney Foundation's done so much, and he was the first president of it. The night before he drowned, he went to Wellington to a meeting. But anyway, what were we talking about?
The Memorial Trust
was set up, and basically the Terrace End Rotarians were keen that they try to get something in Mike's memory, and there was a lot of discussion, and Bruce will know this more than I. Bruce is sitting with me here. How many months did it take for you to get it set up?
Just quickly off the cuff, excuse me, I can't remember how quickly, but things ran very smoothly, and most of the people that we approached were only too willing to help and to get it going. And Brian Elwood, who was mayor of Palmerston North at the time, was also very helpful to us.
He
set up the original trust deed and advised us to what we could do and how we should go about it, and set it up in such a way that if the funds did start to decrease, then we could allocate those funds without too much hassle or with too many legal problems, if you like. That hasn't happened, and the trust has continued to grow.
And
you might be able to talk, Pam, about some of the people we gave money to.
A lot of Rotarians, as well as Rotary clubs, put money in the trust, which was absolutely wonderful. And dentists and people outside the profession also put money in the trust. Mike got on very well with young people, and that made it quite easy for those putting hard work into getting it set up to agree that we would make a trust which would have monies available to help young people across the spectrum of tertiary education, apprenticeships, sporting, someone special with a disability. The trust was to help give a financial kickstart to somebody who had an ability and an opportunity to further themselves, that a financial help would actually achieve that they might not otherwise. We also put in as one of the stipulations that these people needed to be helping themselves too. And over the years, it has been such a wonderful thing to be part of. And Bruce beside me was chairman in the beginning, and he's been involved with it for a long time. We've seen so many lovely young people who we interviewed before we actually gave them an award, and it's right across the spectrum of young people with an ambition and an ability in a particular sport. One of the very first ones, the first year, Mike loved skiing, as we did as a family, and we weren't quite sure about the first year, and we had an application from a young man who had lived at Arkuni and been in a school bus which had an accident, and he lost a leg. And he decided that he wanted to still ski, so he skied with an artificial leg, and he'd done a huge amount of saving for him, his own trip to disabled people's games overseas. And his father, who was a man who was a dock officer on Ruapehu, he was killed in an air accident, and this young man and his mother and family worked very hard, and they'd made saved quite a lot of money, and someone came and stole all the money. Remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Someone came and stole all the money that they'd saved with a big trip round the mountain. Anyway, we gave him a small start that very first year, and I remember him well. Bruce, you mentioned a couple of people.
There was a girl from Pycock, I can't remember her name, yes, but you were quite involved with her and getting what she wanted.
She was a violinist. Oh, what's her name? She came as one of six daughters whose mother was a solo mother, and they lived at Pycock Reiki, and they were all clever, and they were all musicians, I think. And this lovely young girl wanted to go to Victoria to the music school, and she really wanted to do
flute.
She wanted to play the flute, but she couldn't afford a flute. And everything she said encouraged us to think that here was a really worthwhile applicant. And so we actually gave her a silver flute, and she was so great. She could not believe that she came, and we gave her a flute that she could take to university. And she's actually been a teacher here at high schools recently. I met her years ago now in Tihoro, playing in a three-fourths, I think. And that was wonderful. There's a girl who's a very, very well-respected academic working for people, disabled people, or people with mental health problems, Bronwyn Hayward. She was a very early one, and we gave several very early awards to people who had physical disabilities, which we could help them with transport to university. Oh, I know another one who was a young girl at Massey who was studying agriculture science. And she had been playing hockey as a 12-year-old, I think in Levin, and she got a hockey ball in her side of her face, which made her completely deaf. And she was at Massey doing extremely well, but it was before we had all these wonderful computers that can do voice activation and things. and she needed somebody to write down all the university notes so that she could read them because she couldn't hear any of the lectures. And she came and interviewed very well, and we were happy to give her a help start with one of the first computers that would be able to be used. And she came years later, and she went through with straight A's or A pluses. And years later, I had a phone call from her. She had just had a cochlear implant, and she was so excited, and she was very successful and still very grateful, and got in touch with me, and she said she was having to learn to talk again. All sorts of ones. What else?
Oh, yes, all of them. As you say, it's quite a cross-section of people. I can remember on one occasion we gave some money to a boy from Paiatua who was doing motocross, I think.
Motocross, yes.
Yeah. And also another boy up in the Pahongana Valley who was propagating New Zealand native trees, you know, some of the bigger trees.
Yes, and somebody from Mount Bruce. In the last not too few years, we've had singers, we've had musicians and sports people and wonderful doctors that are going to make a difference in the world, and it's been wonderful to just help them take an opportunity. Young people that have gone to universities, that urban architect
in the last few years. Another girl that we helped her buy a dog. She was a shepherd or training to become a shepherd, and we helped her buy one of her underway dogs.
Absolutely. She was one of the first girls at the it's at Mangaweka or somewhere, Hunterville.
Yes.
There's
an agricultural
college. Exciting. It's been, I said for years, it's been the best day of my year for many, many years, because unless you interview, an application will never show you the intensity of desire, the passion, the eagerness, or the real person that wants one of these awards. And sometimes your mind is completely changed because you see a different person. It's been so exciting, isn't it?
It has. It's been very exciting.
Thank you for listening to Manawatū Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatū People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatū Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.